Welcome to This Week in General Medicine. This week, we're covering 10 notable papers spanning three broad themes. Interventions that turned out not to work as hoped, transfusion safety signals that could change how we think about blood products, and a cluster of practical updates for chronic disease management in the office. Let's dive in. Let's start with two well-conducted trials that came back negative, both in the Lancet and the BMJ, and both worth knowing because they push back against expensive or effortful practices. In the head sore trial published in the BMJ, Yuan and colleagues randomized nearly 1,400 patients across 67 Chinese stroke centers who had achieved successful reperfusion after thrombectomy for anterior circulation large vessel occlusion. For 72 hours afterwards, patients were kept either with the head elevated at 30 to 40 degrees or essentially flat. At 90 days, the disability distribution on the modified Rankin scale was the same in both arms, with a median score of 3 in each, and the difference did not reach statistical significance. Mortality was around 1 in 5 in both groups, again with no significant difference. The authors are honest that the confidence around the estimate leaves open the possibility of a modest benefit from head elevation. But as it stands, this trial does not support mandating one position over the other after successful thrombectomy. Alongside that, Racer Knee in The Lancet asked whether robotic arm assistance improves total knee replacement. Parsons and colleagues ran a genuinely rigorous, pragmatic trial across 10 hospitals in Great Britain with 33 surgeons, and they went to real lengths to mask patients using sham incisions, extra draping, and masked operation notes. 339 patients were randomized to the Mako robotic system or conventional instruments. At 12 months, the forgotten joint score was essentially identical, around 50 in both arms, with the small difference actually favoring conventional surgery and nowhere near the pre-specified 12-point target. Serious adverse events were identical, 16 in each group, and robotic surgery cost more. For the general physician counseling a patient about knee replacement, the honest answer is that robotic assistance, as delivered in routine practice, does not buy a better knee at 1 year. Turning to transfusion medicine, where two papers this week raise questions that most of us have never had to consider at the bedside. In JAMA Internal Medicine, Kaufman and colleagues examined more than 550,000 platelet and plasma transfusions across 40 sites in 5 countries, testing whether alpha-gal syndrome, the tick bite-associated red meat allergy, can be triggered by transfused blood. The logic is that B antigen resembles the alpha-gal sugar. In regions of the United States where alpha-gal syndrome is common, blood type O recipients who received B or AB plasma or platelets had roughly 4 times the rate of allergic transfusion reactions compared with type O recipients who got type O units, and for moderate to severe reactions to B units, the risk was about 9 times higher. In low prevalence regions, no excess was detected in the primary analysis, and no signal was seen outside the United States. Overall, allergic reactions remained rare, around 3 in 1,000 transfusions, but this is provocative epidemiologic evidence for a genuinely new entity the authors called transfusion-related alpha-gal syndrome. If you practice in a tick-endemic region and your type O patient has an unexplained anaphylactic transfusion reaction, the donor's blood group is now part of the differential. From a different angle, a viewpoint in The Lancet by Banerjee and colleagues asks whether amyloid beta pathology can be transmitted through blood products. Building on the recognition of iatrogenic cerebral amyloid angiopathy after historical medical procedures and on epidemiological data suggesting hemorrhage risk may track between donors and recipients, they lay out the prion biology and what transfusion services would need to know. This is hypothesis-generating rather than actionable, but it is a reminder that the latency of seeded protein misfolding is measured in decades. The third theme is chronic disease management, and here the news is more immediately usable. Annals of Internal Medicine published a synopsis of the 2025 Veterans Affairs and Department of Defense guideline on adult overweight and obesity, summarized by Corrado and colleagues. 2 points matter most for primary care. First, screening now uses body mass index of 25 or above, with a lower threshold of 23 for Asian adults, combined with waist circumference and clinical context rather than body mass index alone. Second, and more of a change in practice culture, the panel found insufficient evidence to require patients to complete a course of comprehensive lifestyle intervention before starting pharmacotherapy, lifestyle intervention remains the strongly recommended foundation, but drugs and lifestyle can be integrated flexibly and in parallel, and the guideline explicitly discourages stopping an effective weight loss medication because weight regain follows. There are new recommendations covering GLP-1 receptor agonists, endoscopic therapies, and bariatric surgery, all framed around stigma-informed longitudinal care. Complementing that, PLOS Medicine reports a 3-arm randomized trial by Johnson and colleagues of a digital mental health program for adults living with chronic medical conditions. 825 participants across 13 countries were assigned to a waitlist to a self-directed program combining video-guided movement, breathwork, meditation, and a coping skills curriculum, or to that same program plus weekly 15-minute phone check-ins from trained non-clinicians. At 12 weeks, the supported arm improved anxiety and depression scores by about 3 points on the hospital anxiety and depression scale relative to control, a statistically significant result, with parallel gains in fatigue and quality of life and no intervention-related adverse events. The interesting finding is that the self-directed arm did essentially as well, with no significant difference between the two intervention arms. Given that more than half of patients with chronic conditions report anxiety, depression, or fatigue, a scalable self-directed option is worth knowing about. Caveats include a waitlist control, self-reported diagnoses, and a predominantly female, highly educated sample. Finally, 3 reference quality reviews landed this week that are worth bookmarking. JAMA published a review of postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome by Chung and Raj, a condition affecting somewhere between 1 in 1,000 and 1 in 100 people in the United States, about 90% of them female, with peak onset in the teens and 20s. In a survey of nearly 5,000 patients, around 70% reported substantial functional impairment and loss of school or work, and the median delay to diagnosis was 2 years. The diagnostic criteria are a sustained heart rate rise of at least 30 beats per minute on standing, 40 in adolescence within 10 minutes, without orthostatic hypotension after excluding thyroid disease, anemia, adrenal insufficiency, medication effects, and structural heart or lung disease. In 30 to 40% of cases, symptoms began within 3 months of an infection, including SARS-CoV-2 and Epstein-Barr. First-line management is non-pharmacological. Fluid and sodium loading, lower body compression, heat avoidance and structured supervised aerobic training, with beta blockers, ivabradine, midodrine, fludrocortisone, or pyridostigmine added individually, acknowledging that the trial evidence for all of these is thin. The BMJ published a state-of-the-art review of acute hyperkalemia by Rech and colleagues, emphasizing how much practice variation persists in definitions, risk stratification and treatment, and covering the role of the newer potassium binders alongside the traditional acute measures, particularly in chronic kidney disease, heart failure, and patients on renin-angiotensin-aldosterone blockade. In Nature Reviews, Disease Primers published a comprehensive primer on cancer pain, stressing that cancer pain is not one entity but several mechanisms, that non-neuronal cells, including immune cells and glia, are increasingly implicated, that sex differences modulate both pain and analgesic response, and that management should be multimodal from the outset rather than a simple opioid ladder, including in long-term survivors with chronic pain. If you only have time for one paper this week, make it the Annals of Internal Medicine Obesity Guideline Synopsis. It directly changes how you sequence lifestyle intervention and pharmacotherapy in a conversation you are probably having several times a day, and it removes the expectation that patients must earn a prescription by failing lifestyle change first. Here are the key takeaways from this week in general medicine. Head elevation after successful thrombectomy did not improve 90-day disability or mortality, so positioning need not be mandated. Robotic arm-assisted total knee replacement costs more and delivered no meaningful patient benefit at 1 year in a well-masked pragmatic trial. In tick-endemic parts of the United States, type O patients receiving B or AB plasma or platelets appear to be at substantially higher risk of allergic transfusion reactions, a possible new manifestation of alpha-gal syndrome. Obesity pharmacotherapy no longer needs to wait for a completed course of lifestyle intervention, and effective medications should not be stopped, because weight regain follows. And a self-directed digital program reduced anxiety and depression in adults with chronic conditions as effectively as one with weekly human check-ins. which makes scalable delivery plausible. That's your roundup for this week in general medicine. The full transcript and references are available on the episode page in your Audio Scholar library. This is an AI-curated summary. For clinical decisions, always consult primary sources and current guidelines. See you next week. If this weekly briefing is useful, follow the show in your podcast app so new episodes arrive automatically. And think of one colleague in any specialty who never has time to keep up with the literature. Tell them about Audio Scholar, a free 10-minute weekly for every specialty, to listen to in any podcast app, or to read at audioscholar.cc. This is an automated summary generated by artificial intelligence, which can make mistakes. Always review the original source materials.